You know, everybody's got a to-do list. Drop off the dry cleaning, pick up some milk. Here's an idea. Let's save hundreds of dollars on car insurance. And the good thing is you don't have to drop off or pick up anything. All you have to do is go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes you could be saving 15% or more on car insurance. Extra money in your pocket, it just may be the most rewarding to-do you do today.
Now Podcast One brings you Spike's Car Radio. A downloadable Cars and Coffee, hosted by writer, comedian, and automotive enthusiast, Spike Ferriston. Now, here's Spike.
Hey everybody, Spike's Car Radio here. I'm here with Matt Farah. We've got a great show for you today. We've got Bobby Moynihan, formerly of SNL. You may remember him in the David S. Pumpkin sketch. I think I only want to talk to him about that sketch. But he and I did a mini commercial a few years ago for Esquire Network, and can't wait to catch up with him. Super funny guy. But right now I'm here with Matt Farah, sitting in for the real Zuckerman.
I don't appreciate this sitting in accusation. I think.
What do you mean?
I'm not substituting.
You are today. Yeah, you are.
I thought I was guesting.
Well, here's the thing.
Does that mean,
you know,
Zuckerman is a permanent seat now?
Zuckerman is not a permanent seat. However, I like to bring you in to co-host when I have funny people, because I know you don't have you're a huge fan of comedy. You like to do. You were thinking about doing stand-up yourself.
I tried it one time and then psyched myself out of it.
I realized last night. Was it last night that I texted you?
I think so. A lot of planning involved in this.
That Zuckerman was still in Sicily. And I went, oh, you know, I'd like to see Matt Farah. He's going to like, this will be a nice morning for all of us.
Zuckerman's having
mortadella. How would you like me to describe this, the sitting in? Whatever you say, it's
fine. You know, in hindsight, that's probably accurate.
Yeah, you're just hanging out, right?
Yeah.
You asked me to come by and sit in and hang out.
Yeah,
and
I need you to do that again soon, by the way.
What do you mean? Yeah, anytime.
Come on my show.
Of course.
The Smoking Tire Podcast.
Anytime.
Which we do live now on YouTube.
I'm super excited that you're here because I'm trying to make sense of what's going on with Tesla.
Uh-huh.
All right.
Well, okay.
I don't pay that close of attention to it, but I'm starting to worry that Musk is some sort of madman.
Lunatic. Yes.
You know, in my opinion. And there's this whole email thing that's going on and this talk of sabotage this week. What is that? What do you know about that? And then I want to read some of the transcripts that Jalopnik put up of these emails this back and forth.
I had a busy day yesterday and saw the headline but didn't get to go through. I didn't read the emails, but I'm excited that you have them. I would like to hear them from your mouth.
Okay.
Let me ask you a question. In the grand scheme of groups of people you trust, where would you put white South Africans?
Well, I try not to make sweeping generalizations about
white
races.
South Africans that left South Africa, say, in 1994. Where would you put the trust level?
I don't know what you're getting at. My friend Genevieve Genevieve Morton, the Sports Illustrated swimsuit model, she's from South Africa. Perfectly nice young lady. I really like her.
I'm just saying, if people who are white South Africans that build rockets and has found massive payment processing companies.
I still don't understand.
No
what
idea
you're
where
at.
I'm going with that
I don't.
Whatsoever. Okay.
No. When I think of South Africa, I think of that guy who rigged the car with the flamethrower out the side.
Oh, the Johannesburg car alarm. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, Johannesburg, you know, had a real problem with with carjacking.
Right.
And so they made legal some, like, proper anti-carjacking devices. So you could get these things installed that would, like, shock people. You know, if someone tried to grab the door handle, it would like a taser on their hand, or the flamethrower one. That actress, what was her name? This past week, this actress, she's married to a director. Mm-hmm. Mary McCormick?
I know Mary McCormick.
Yeah, and her husband
and
is
I know
a director,
her
right?
Yes.
Did you see the video?
Yes, I did.
Of his car doing the Johannesburg car alarm. It was shooting a flame out the side because the battery pack ruptured or something.
I know. I'm
so,
aware.
Like, look, I don't know. Tesla. Oh, hey, there. Tesla, you know, you've driven the cars. You've been in the cars. They're neat.
They're
cool.
Neat.
And what they're doing as a company in terms of a direct sales thing and in terms of shaking up the industry, like, is clearly very interesting. And they have some very, very loyal customers, loyal to a fault.
I see.
But, you know, Elon, as this sort of larger than life, when you have, like, billions of dollars and you spend your Sunday mornings fucking fighting with people on Twitter, bro.
I know, but I'm, you know, I don't just don't get me wrong on this one, but I'm starting to draw Trump and Elon Musk correlations to a psychological type profile.
Without saying anything political, I'm just saying
the guy who's on Twitter and these insane things start happening.
And he didn't he steal Johnny Depp's girlfriend too? Like,
I don't know about that. I don't care about that.
But no, it's a pattern of behavior. Johnny Depp's not all there right now.
And
I'm not
so
pro-Johnny Depp, but
anybody who's going out with Johnny Depp isn't all there. But now he. You know, but anyway, you just brought up a lot of stuff. First of all, you know, just I want to get back to these emails, but quickly, what do we think happened with the Mary McCormick's husband's car?
I think the battery pack somehow was ruptured, and that is like a lithium fire,
right,
basically. And believe it, as scary as that video is, that system, believe it or not, is functioning properly. I mean, it's not supposed to be on fire, but it's the in case of fire system.
Yeah.
That fire, rather than burning up into the passenger compartment, has a thing that deflects it.
Right.
So if you see the video from Twitter or wherever, the fire is shooting away from the car.
Correct.
So like, yeah, there's not supposed to be fire, but like the anti-dying in case of fire system has operated.
And these are lithium
batteries,
right?
Yeah.
And Tesla
has like, I can't remember the number. It's like 6,000 basically laptop batteries,
okay,
like wired together. Mm-hmm. That's pretty much what a Tesla battery pack is.
And what are we supposed to happen there? That maybe he bottomed out on something? Isn't there protection under there?
There is, but like there are things that can happen. You bottom out, you hit a curb. I mean, you know,
there could have been a manufacturing defect. Just from gleaning, and maybe I'm wrong, but this is my opinion about this stuff. But whenever I see Tesla is going to investigate, I'm starting not to trust that investigation.
You don't get to investigate yourself, bro. That's the parallel with Trump. When some shit happens and Elon goes, don't worry, we'll investigate.
Right.
I want to support this guy.
I like innovation.
Dude, the problem is the least trustworthy person in the world is a titan of industry because they're so focused on this business that they will throw individuals. I just finished the book.
And I'm also starting to get annoyed, like when I see the boring flamethrower company.
Trying to save the environment is selling flamethrowers in California.
It's tone deaf. That was a tone deaf, and there are all these yuppies with flamethrowers.
Yeah.
And I'm like, is this really what American innovation looks like? Is that what we need to be doing right now?
The flamethrower is a creme brulee torch wired into a super soaker and painted. That's what it is.
When I'm not coming up with shows with John, my partner out at Santa Monica Airport, we design other Elon Musk inventions, and we invented a new way for people to get from Los Angeles to San Francisco called Fling. And it's a very the catapult is part of the logo.
Is it a trebuchet?
Yes. We can get you there,
you guys,
in
long.
About 30 minutes with the right Fling device.
The problem is what happens when you actually get there, because you actually
look, we just take care of the transport, but we're getting city funding for Fling. Okay, so now, like in my brain, you know, I've got jobs, I've got work to do, I've got TV show, I got a lot of stuff going on. So I'm looking at news, and I just see Elon Musk, Tesla sabotage, someone sabotaging, right? And then this series of emails that were on on Jalopnik the other day.
Yeah.
And maybe you can help me make sense of this.
Okay.
And they're from a fella named Marty Tripp.
Who's apparently some sort of disgruntled engineer.
Elon Musk.
Yeah.
Subject termination lawsuit. Don't worry, you have what's coming to you for the lies you have told the public and investors.
Oh, God.
Goes.
Is that the first email?
Where the Jalopnik article picks up. And again, I'm just reading what they've published.
Yeah.
Elon Musk wrote, "Threatening me only makes it worse for you." Noticeably, he didn't use a period after that sentence. Marty Tripp seems like a made-up character, doesn't it?
He does. Yeah.
Hold on there.
Like Emil Muzz.
Yeah. That's Marty, my partner calling.
Marty Tripp is a good name, though.
This is what he writes next.
Yeah.
"I never made a threat. I simply told you that you have what's coming to you. Thank you for this gift, 4 exclamation points. I've never understood the multiple exclamation point, by the way. I get one's all you need.
It's like an all caps without an all caps, really.
Right, but it kind of plays like teenage girl. Anyway,
yeah.
Elon Musk writes back, "You should be ashamed of yourself for framing other people, period. You're a horrible human being. Marty Tripp writes back, see, now I'm hooked into this. Is like the Real Housewives of automotive design. I never framed, in quotes, anyone else or even insinuated anything else being involved in my production of documents of your millions of dollars of waste, all caps, safety concerns, lying to investors / the world, all caps. Putting cars on the road with safety issues is being a horrible human being.
Yeah.
Noticeably, one exclamation point, not four. Mm-hmm. Okay, maybe the director's car, maybe not.
Okay.
Finally, it says, he's a typo here, but he says, there are literally injuries with Model 3, Elon Musk writes. What he meant to say, there are no injuries, but he's obviously very frantically angry. It is by far the safest car in the world for any mid-sized vehicle in the world.
Yeah.
Of course, a company with billions of dollars in product is going to have millions of dollars in scrapped. And scrap, that is not news. However, betraying your word of honor, breaking the deal you had with Tesla, gave you a job, and framing your colleagues are wrong, and some come with legal penalties. So it goes, be well. I'm guessing he doesn't really mean that, be well. That's
sarcastic. Here's the thing. All Elon ever had to do was not respond to the first email. you know what I mean? You're literally looking at this is an email chain between a disgruntled worker and a CEO of a company.
I know.
It might as well be a Reddit thread.
Yeah.
If Elon just didn't take the fucking bait.
Right. In an email, for sure.
And in writing.
Yeah.
In writing. What is this?
But what's
happening?
But my question back to circling
here's
back
what's
here
happened.
Is what is happening here? What's going on?
They have,
I don't remember
they
this
are very
the, when
good
I was reading about
at,
Henry Ford.
Well, they're under very intense scrutiny, first off.
Right.
They're under very intense pressure because they have more orders for a car to fill than any, you know.
Well, that's good.
They're also, it's been demonstrated, they're not particularly good at mass production yet.
Yet. Right.
Yet. Not to say they can't be or they won't be or they don't want to be, but yet. Their build quality is pretty meh.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Eh. You know what I mean? Not horrible, but. Eh. And mm-hmm. so sometimes that means a piece of trim might come off. Sometimes that means a shield on a thing might not be there. Sometimes that means wiring might be exposed. Like, sometimes who knows? Like, what's happening?
Who's that fella you recommend following on Twitter?
Oh my God, Bozy?
Yeah, who's that guy? I just started following him, and he is a great feed on Twitter.
He's the most interesting person
on
the fucking planet.
And he showed a picture of Tesla door window switches that were all different.
It looked like a Dodge Journey rental car circa 2011.
It looked like hillbilly front teeth.
Brutal, yeah.
Sorry, hillbilly.
It's at Hoonable, H-O-O-N-A-B-L-E.
And what, is he just on Tesla's back all the time?
No, he's not a Tesla. He, this guy is like, I know him for quite some time. He works on the race car that I drive.
Uh-huh.
And he can fix shit and figure shit out really, really fast. He's Serbian crazy guy. Him and his brother Boyan, the Boost brothers from North Carolina, these are crazy Serbian dudes. And they're great. And Bozy is like such a nerd that he digs through like patent filings and recall notices mm-hmm. and shipping containers. Here's one you'd like. Did you see recently? He was digging through the customs forms.
Yeah.
Like public, not stealing, but like to see what was coming off of container ships
right.
into Long Beach. How he started down this road, I have no idea. But he's digging through the forms and he found the sheet that had seven Porsche 964s. Destination Singer vehicle design from Japan.
Oh, wow.
So he's like, oh, Singer's stock. You know, he just finds his stuff. He's
oh,
like,
that's cool.
And he'll find when, you know, $100,000.
By the way, I think that those are exactly the 964s that start carving up Singer.
Yeah.
I think you're exactly right because the Japanese market really works those things over. They paint them seven times.
Yeah,
they
yeah.
redo the weird things in chrome. There are all sorts of weird electronics inside. You can carve those up and make those nice. I'm cool with that.
But no, he just finds, you know, patent filings and all just kinds of weird stuff and shares it. And it's just – typically the most interesting thing I read on Twitter every day.
Well,
unrelated to Donald
you
Trump.
Know, just getting back to Elon Musk and Tesla, I support innovation. I support all of it. But this is starting to weird me out. As you probably know, I didn't Erica, I finally got her out of a Prius, thank God.
Yeah.
And I got her into a German car, BMW 530 iPerformance.
How does she like it?
She loves it. I love it even more. Safe for the family, the kids, and, you know, a little bit. I have it today. She's away, and I'm driving it today. Drove here in all electric power in a German car with beautiful wireless CarPlay interface.
I think the Porsche,
I love it. It's great.
The Porsche is going to be the one. That's going to be the one.
Well, yeah, the Panamera is even better. This thing,
no,
does,
the Taycan or whatever it's called.
Let's
the
just
new
call
Mission
it
e.
the Mission E burrito. Yeah, I'm going to keep that old name.
It's going to be awesome.
This gets. This morning I got in without putting the air conditioner on. It said I'll have 18 miles, and I drove here in all electric. The second I turned it on, when the sun came out, it went down three miles. But, you know, I would say give me 25, 30 more miles of this with a gas engine. I'm happy.
Yeah,
I'm fine because
well,
I can do
Volt,
most of my
right?
driving on electric. Exactly.
I had a Volt, which was 50 miles of electric. And I, in the 2 years I had the Volt, I filled up 4 tanks of gas.
Right.
In 2 years.
That's
great. It's like, you know, I drove like, it was like 3%, 4% of the time on gas. It was great.
And now imagine having big German luxury cars. But the point was, we were going to get the Model 3 and I lost confidence in the company because of this static. I just started getting nervous about it. And I feel like I made the right decision now. Now look, I want them to succeed. I hope they do better. But you got to stop. Elon, you got to stop.
Fanatical corporate leaders like that I just finished a book called the
Radium. Yeah, but you can't throw out to the world sabotage. There's somebody sabotaged.
Yeah.
These are all poor word choices.
Well, they're inflammatory intentionally. Intentionally.
Yeah, but
if Elon can control the narrative, which this is what Trump does. If he can control the narrative by starting the conversation at sabotage, this puts poor Marty Tripp on his heels from day one.
Yeah, but but what's
Marty
the goal?
Tripp
selling cars
right.
or flooring Marty Tripp?
Bro, he doesn't want to sell cars.
He doesn't.
He doesn't give a shit about that.
Yeah. Well,
selling cars is branding.
Right.
It's the Silicon Valley mentality is shareholders and stock value.
Right.
That's it. For them, mapping technology and the autonomous leading that autonomous thing, and for Elon, I think getting off this planet.
Right.
but
I hope after hearing this, he doesn't mind hearing my pitch for Fling. And if you don't like Fling, I've got plenty more.
I mean, how will the panel gaps be on your trebuchets?
Well, you'll see. Well, we have Bobby Moynihan here.
Yeah, he
just
waiting,
walked in. He's sitting out there looking at his Twitter account. I'm excited to talk to him. Let's bring him in. Bobby Moynihan, ladies and gentlemen. Have you met Bobby before?
No, never.
He can sit right there. Bobby and I first met shooting
Hello,
a commercial
I'm
for
Matt.
Mini. This is
How
Matt Farah. Hey, Bobby.
I'm a fan. Welcome.
How are you?
Matt. M-A-T-T.
Matt. Yeah. Hey, buddy. How are you? Good to see you.
How's everything?
I'm excellent. You can wear headphones or you don't have to. It's up to you.
Professional. Optional.
Yeah.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
Excellent.
Well.
I was just telling everybody how we met, which was shooting a mini commercial.
Correct. As everyone meets.
For... I think it was for Esquire Network and NBC. I don't recall, but here's what
What was the concept of the commercial?
I don't know. Oh, you were a wild Italian director, a Roberto Benigni type.
Correct.
Right?
I was a weird Italian director. It was for Mini Coopers?
Mini Cooper, for some branded content for the show, for the network, and then I think for an ad by NBC. But what I learned very quickly is why
– they clearly got what they paid for.
They did not. They did not. Why Bobby is a funny person and I'm really not. Bobby, do you remember the first scene we shot where you had an espresso? You had – whatever we were saying to each other, some stupid lines, you finished by sipping an espresso?
Yes, I do.
And do you remember what you did with it?
No.
You went – Oh. And he just kept doing that for longer than the take permitted.
Yeah, yeah.
And it cracked everybody up. I mean,
because in a 30-second commercial, you want a bit that lasts 25 seconds.
With horrible writing.
Real smart.
We just showed up to set. We didn't really have access to any scripts or doing anything to it. So we're just kind of going along with the paid commercial.
I feel like a lot of it was like, you got this.
Yeah, wing it.
Make it funny.
Just make it. That would be good for like one of those, like an Instagram loop. That goes on like forever, just for like 90 minutes.
I remember it being fun. I remember it being surprised at how much they put into it.
Yes.
How good it looked.
Yeah, it was
production value wise.
I also remember.
Mean?
I think I needed to pay. I needed to pay my rent.
Well, I don't know how you came into it, but Esquire would always call me up and go, "You're kind of doing this," and I said, "All right.
Do you like your budget?
You're kind of paying me for it, so we would hammer out some deal."
It was all the Esquire shows. It was like, or there was like a bunch of TV shows, because it was like Jenny Poulos.
Right. Oh, that's right.
And
that's right.
Full commercial, did with her, never met her once. But we're talking to each other in the commercial.
Oh, really?
Never met her. But I think she's great. I think she's
wonderful. Right. So the NBC Universal ad department would make a buy with Minnie, and they would call. They'd go, okay, we want to be on Spike's show.
We want to be on this Bravo show.
We want to be SNL. And they'd play across all the networks and buy the ads. And then
Andy wasn't available.
We were hooked into doing this. No, I thought it was great. I thought it was fun. I loved the brand. You were hilarious.
It came out pretty good. Like, I remember being like, well, that wasn't like embarrassing.
Yeah, that's good. If the commercial comes out, you go, okay, we're good. Yeah, yeah.
So then I called Wally. I called my brother, cue card guy for Star Ant Live.
Greatest man in the world.
I got him that job, by the way.
Cue card guy?
Cue card guy.
Did you really
now
get
he runs
him that
the company.
Job?
I did. Yeah, I did. Years ago.
A lifetime union gig? Like, that guy's going to
work
until he's 75?
You know, I used to work for this show.
You were a writer for a while.
No. I was never a writer. I was the receptionist.
Oh, amazing.
I was the receptionist that wrote jokes for Dennis Miller in Weekend Update. And
on eight? On the eighth floor?
Yeah, yeah.
No way.
I was right at the main desk in front of, at the time, Phil Hartman and Kevin Nealon.
Well, I read your book. I have a question. I read your book, the whole thing about the Elaine dance thing.
Oh, yeah.
You wrote a fucking
Do
book.
I have a book?
You wrote
book
a book?
Is
am I wrong? Am I crazy?
Yeah. Wait. Yeah. I've been asked to write a book, but I haven't done that
yet. Whose book is
it? I read something recent, or someone's book.
I know.
I think
it's the Seinfeld book that this woman wrote about Seinfeld.
Elaine dance is based on Lauren?
Yeah. That's the only person I've told that story to. Yes.
And they told everybody? Are you upset about that? And now that I just brought it up, are you
angry? Is that how Lauren Michaels dances? Is that a secret that we're now learning?
A lot has just come up.
Oh, shit.
We must discuss.
Oh, no.
I feel terrible
right
now.
Right about that time when I was very intimidated. As you know, you've worked there for many years or did work there for many years. How many years were you there?
Nine.
9 years. Lauren is a very intimidating presence, especially in that first year, especially for a kid like me who's coming from Massachusetts. No showbiz experience anywhere. I've just watched this show. And Lorne Michaels was a very intimidating guy. And I couldn't even look
showbiz.
At the, and I was very shy and very insecure, and I couldn't even look at the guy, really. And then one night, because I'm the receptionist, I also work the party. I work the front door with Susie Dresden. We control who goes in and out. And then we go in about 2 hours in. And on the dance floor is Sinead O'Connor, and I think Madonna was there one night, and Lorne Michaels. And
it's not the night Sinead O'Connor ripped up the picture of the Pope, is
could
it?
Be.
Oh,
might.
My God. This is like
no.
a legendary SNL
and
nerd
And it's not
night.
Even included
know.
In part of his story. Yeah.
Because
it's
I'm
like,
not
that's the
– You know what?
The backdrop of this is the most legendary political protest ever
because
in the history of the show.
It's really not the most legendary part of the evening.
At all.
Because that episode then gets a little bigger and more – it could be. So this would be 85, 86, somewhere around there. And, you know, there's Lauren out on the dance floor. I'm dancing with Sinead O'Connor. He's dancing with Madonna, and he's doing this dance, this little
Shut
kicks
up.
Dance.
And I know what you're talking about. I've seen it.
You've seen the dance,
seen
right?
Do it?
Yeah, I was at –
Now, I was
SNL
not
–
Did you put it together that
no.
they were connected? Okay.
I was not making fun of Lauren, but that moment really humanized him to
oh,
me.
Yeah.
You
my
know what I mean?
Thing
I just saw him as another comedy nerd like any of us.
I think I probably had a lot more time with Lauren than you did, I'm guessing. As a
yes,
cast
sir.
Member, we spent a lot more time with him. And he's terrifying in the beginning, but I think that's part of it. But then,
yeah, yeah.
And then you realize he's just a big Canadian comedy nerd. And he's the greatest. It's still very, very, very intimidating.
To remember that he's Canadian, does that help?
Yeah,
a little bit.
He reminds you a lot.
And then, you know, after that moment, I kind of could look him in the eye. Even though I never really spoke to him, I wasn't all that spooked around him.
Were you ever confronted about once the Elaine dance episode aired? Was anyone ever confronted about
it? Well, first of all, I went.
It blew my mind.
I pitched it in my first season, and Larry didn't get it. He goes, I don't get what you're talking about. And I said, it's a office dynamic. I don't understand. So I couldn't get on that first year. But when Larry left, that was the first thing I went in with. I go, trust me, this is a good one. This really happened. It's weird. weird. I've never seen it before. And Elaine's working in an office. And what if she loses the respect of the office because of her bad dancing? Well, what kind of dancing? And I go, this. These little kicks that Lorne Michaels used to do. And then when Jerry heard it was about Lorne, he was charmed by the story and thought it was fun. And we did the story. And you know, there it is.
God,
but yeah, they did reach out. You know, you have to remember back then, Seinfeld, you know, we had helicopters flying over the sets trying to learn what stories we were doing. And the soup Nazi had exploded the year before. And Lorne didn't want the heat on him. And he reached out through Robert Smigel and said, can you please not say this was based on me? Because the previous year I had said, oh, yeah, that's based on the soup cellar in New York.
Amazing.
And I totally got that. I was like, yeah, I don't want to – I love this guy. I love this guy. I love what he did for my career.
Lorne missed out on all those tours in Times
Square. Yeah, I know. He could have been on the Seinfeld tour.
He's had many characters based on him over the years. He's a legend. And
Rambo.
I did not want to be the instrument of his anxiety.
No one does.
Because I, you know, I
just heard that recently and it blew my mind.
But he gave me a shot, you know. I was a bartender in Boston, and
he's
I'm
why
here
we're
because
talking
of him.
To each other, right?
Yeah, exactly. So there you go.
That's
so,
a good
anyway,
backstory, though. I'm gonna tell that to people who care.
It's been many years now. Well, Seinfeld wanted to start almost 30 years ago.
It's such a neat, awesome
fact. Just had the anniversary of the end, 10-year anniversary of the end.
Of Seinfeld?
Yeah.
Wow.
It ended in 98.
Well, I thought they were celebrating 30 years next year. Somebody told me because there's all these plants in New York. But
I heard 50.
When this woman called, I said, all right, I'll tell the story. I mean, I think I've told enough people that it's out there yet, and now you are repeating it back to me.
So
No.
It's crazy.
It was in a book. It was then in the New York Post, it was there.
I just saw it recently, and it blew my mind. My wife is a diehard Seinfeld fan. And
oh, wow.
Just nuts.
Who isn't? Everybody.
Julia really took that dance to the next level. Julia
Louis-Dreyfus. Yeah.
She, you know, that's what was genius about that entire cast. You could give them that little germ of he kicked around and the rest of it. And she just, you know, goes like this. And I went, wow. All right. I don't know what's going to happen once we see when you do this.
That dance is the kind of thing that would get you ostracized from an office. It really, really sold it when she did it. I mean, it's a fucking.
Well,
you look at her and go, what is.
Right. Right. Anyway, Bobby Moynihan.
That's me.
How are you?
Good, man. Doing well.
I want to talk about everything. I'd love, since we're talking about SNL, I'd love to talk about your experience on the show. How do you find your way to SNL?
Wow. I guess as a kid, I just watched it. You know, I found it, you know, through just watching TV.
Where did you grow up?
Westchester. I grew up in Eastchester.
New York?
Yeah,
that's where you're from.
All right, Rye, represent.
Oh, I used to play hockey in Rye.
Did you?
Great deal,
Rye Country Day School.
Oh, no way.
We had the best rink because it was the coldest.
I went there every morning before school.
Yeah, bro.
Are you guys rich kids?
No.
Isn't Westchester
I
like?
I was, yeah.
Well, Rye was, yeah, Rye.
Rye was.
Yeah. Not Eastchester. No.
I don't
It was like
know
Rye, like
that.
good, like then like Neuchâtel, Tuckahoe, Eastchester. Like it kind of went.
Okay.
It wasn't like not nice.
It was fine. Now it's a lot nicer, but no.
Is it close to New York? Just trying to get a
It's like 20 minutes away.
20 minutes away. So you're close to the city, right?
Yeah.
And are you always you're doing comedy when you come out of high school? What did you think you were going to do for a living?
I did a lot of everything. I wanted to draw comic books and like I didn't know what I wanted. I did a lot of theater in high school with friends and stuff, and then there was no way I was getting into college. I was not a good student, so I realized like I started looking at like stuff for maybe drawing.
What made you a bad student? Were you screwing around or
were
you not studying?
I just had no attentions. Yeah, it was that. I was just trying to make people. It was that. It was I had no idea that I should be doing this. I was or should be just. It was a lot of like he was talking all through class, but it was funny. So we're not. He's not in trouble, but
right.
With like nobody like
that.
Hey,
were you just bored in class?
I definitely took. Went into the art room one day, took a bunch of paints, and this wasn't like this was like high school, middle school, like you know, like I was old enough to know better, but I also knew that like I went up to the art room, got a bunch of paints, went down to the main hallway right in front of the cafeteria, middle of the day, and just started painting a mural of the Simpsons, like just painted the Simpsons sitting on the couch. painted the whole thing, took like, and people walking by, talking, everyone's like, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm painting the Simpsons. And remember getting called in and being like, what, like what, like just confused, complete confusion, like what are you doing? And the end result.
So on school property, on
the
their
end
wall.
Result was Homer's holding a beer can. You have to change it to can't say beer, it has to say soda.
That's it.
Really?
And
so it was that good?
It was there for like 10 years.
You said to write Duff Cola.
Yeah, I think, or I wrote Duff and they made me change it to beer.
No
or
kidding.
Soda, sorry.
So you're that good.
I mean, no, I'm no. I wish I was better at drawing.
Yeah.
Mean?
Yeah.
No,
yeah. I mean, if they left it.
I practiced a lot. Yeah. Yeah. It was good. It was good. It was good.
Unbelievable.
It was fine. It looked like The Simpsons. But, yeah. No, I was pretty, like, artsy, whatever. I did theater in high school and then. Mm-hmm. Looked at University of Connecticut because they had a puppetry department, and I loved like I loved Jim Henson. Like yeah. I really wanted those, like the Muppets. I don't know what I
what
know
do your
I
parents
love
do?
Wait, Marionettes too. What do you study?
Yeah.
What do your parents do? Just give me some context.
Dad was my dad owned a liquor store, and my mom worked in the town hall. She was the town assessor.
Oh, cool! I love this. That's very. It
they're
feels
like real
very...
community people, right? That's real, real in the. East
yeah,
Chester
they're the
community.
they were the best. They
so
both
this so
away
it's not
a months ago.
It's not oh that God, scary no, then not. What you're pursuing then because to, they're not professionals in any way. See, my mom was a nurse and my dad was like sold novelty calendars. So any of the I'm in your fantastic. Same zone. Just the same stuff. School's making no sense. I'm playing guitars outside and getting in trouble and inspired lunacy in the high school for laughs.
Yeah, it was a lot of like playing with my right. You know, just playing. Playing by myself or the kids in my building.
That's amazing.
Them
so,
laugh
so you get you decide to study puppetry.
I didn't go to. I thought about it. I just want. I
so
wanted.
Did you
I
go
was
to
like,
that college?
I went like this. I went jobs in my life or in my mind. I went like, well, I would like to work at the Jim Henson Company and do what they do and
that's
seem
cool.
like they have fun.
Right.
Like it didn't.
Exactly.
It wasn't a reality thing. Like it was right. more like a fantasy world I was in, where it was like or Saturday Night Live. They look like they. That's what I would like to do.
Right.
I would love to make up stuff all the time.
Yes.
Yeah. So like that's weirdly. What I thought, at least going into college and went to UConn or went to go look at UConn because it was the only school in America that had a puppetry department
mm-hmm.
and ended up auditioning for the acting department like on a whim, kind of like I did One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest in high school. So I was like, I'll go do a scene from that. I remember it and like got in and
wow.
and like kind of just went like, I guess I'll do this for a bit. And then was an acting major in college, did a bunch of like Shakespeare in Canada, went and like did all this like different stuff and learned a lot about theater and then thought I was going to go back to New York and do theater. And then I came back to New York. I saw one show at Upright Citizens Brigade and I was like, oh, no, this.
Yeah.
And that was it. Saw one show there that night. The next morning I went back, signed up for classes, got a job bartending there. And
there it is.
Stayed at UCB for...
UCB in New York or LA?
Until I got SNL. Yeah, New York. The original theater on 22nd Street.
What
was
what
the
is...
last like Harold team, like the last team of people mm-hmm. at that before they moved to 26th.
What distinguishes UCB from the other ones as far as like a improvisation or is it all the same?
I mean, I 10 years ago, I could have answered this question immediately for an hour. Right now, I go like, oh, I think it was like Second City. I feel like Second City was very like old school sketch comedy, and they teach you that. And mm-hmm. It's all of like, and they have their way of doing it, and they still do a lot of their old sketches now. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you know, it's like a lot of like a review they did a while. I'm not positive, but I feel
right.
like they repeated or did a lot of their shows a great deal. And like it was all about polished and great scene work and all that stuff. And then there was like I.O. and Annoyance and all these other places. But I feel like UCB was kind of like its own thing, which was just Amy, Matt, Bess, Amy, Matt, Ian and Matt.
That's Amy Poehler.
Amy Poehler, right. Matt Walsh. Matt Besser, Ian Roberts, Horatio mm-hmm. Sands was involved
yep.
originally too, and a bunch of guys. It was this other like Del Close thing, this Harold, like just like another kind of form
mm-hmm.
of doing it. And while when I first got there, it was like you know Paul Scheer, Rob Hubel, like you know like all these amazing greats that are working now, and Rob Corddry and everybody, and like that whole first class, and then. My group was kind of like the second mm-hmm. class after that, like Chris Gethard and Katie Dippold and a bunch of people. And Zach Woods, Ben Schwartz, all those guys. And then it was like 60 of us taking classes and just like, you know what I mean? Like it was like there was a lot, but it wasn't what it is now. And like when I first started, there was no YouTube, you know,
right,
all that
right.
stuff. So it was
just
like
doing
shows every night at 2 o'clock in the morning.
Of those 60, were there just like 10 people who should not have been there? Were there?
No.
Instantly,
no.
Did you just look and
no,
go, oh,
that's
boy,
the crazy
go,
thing.
Go
when
back
I,
home.
When I look back at like that, like I'm not one of the original members by far,
right?
But like I came in at the tail end of like what I feel like is the beginning of the, you know, the real where we really started, where they moved to that theater and they started doing classes and made it a school, and the touring company started and all that stuff. Where mm-hmm. it just went from like a place above a strip club to a nicer place underneath a grocery store. But it was something very different. But all of those people are working now. I mean, everybody. It's like Donald Glover, wow. Aubrey Plaza, Ellie Kemper. You know what I mean?
Wow.
They're all like these
like stars.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like everybody.
And you're working with Ellie Kemper right now, aren't you?
Yeah, on Kimmy Schmidt. We just finished, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
It was a blast. She's the greatest.
And where do we see Kimmy Schmidt? That's Hulu, right?
Netflix.
Netflix. What season are they on?
Four.
Four?
Four.
Yeah.
How many shows did they do a season?
12.
Wow.
This was the first season. They released 6, and now we just shot the others to 6, and they're releasing them, I believe, in January. I'm not positive on that, though.
Can I ask a light industry question?
Sure.
Is it, having done, like, traditional TV for a really long time, do you find the experience of making the show for Netflix to be any different, really, than making something for traditional broadcast TV? Or does the – from – going
yes,
to work
but
every
not
day.
For Kimmy Schmidt. It was like I went from SNL immediately to a sitcom on CBS called Me, Myself, and uh-huh. I that lasted, I think it was, we shot 13 episodes, but
it
I think
was
they
10
aired
years.
6, and that was when I found out online about
oh,
it.
Oh.
That was a big shock.
Wait. Like, you found out online the show was canceled?
Yeah. Yeah,
and
it was super fun.
You were the star of the show.
Correct.
Yeah.
Did you create the show? You didn't create
no,
the show.
No, I had nothing to do with it other than being on it.
So
but
they
you
cast
would think.
It.
Ever since then, it's
so
Bobby Moynihan's show. I was
what
like,
site?
Oh, like,
was it Deadline?
I don't even remember. I don't even remember, to be honest. Are I you... was just sad because it was – what I was going to say was going from the coolest show in the world.
Yes.
Like going from like my absolute dream job – to sitting next to who I absolutely adore, and out of all of everything, the thing that I got out of it the most is my
right.
relationship with Jaleel White. But sitting next to Jaleel
White
and going like, well, I guess I'm just a weird single dad. You know, every week I went like, oh, no, what have I done? But the process of it, it was amazing. I loved it. But it went away in a real kind of shitty unknown way. So that sucked about it.
But that's fine. I mean, when it goes away quickly, that's good.
Yeah,
you're going to be back.
Like, all right, sweet. Gone. Bye.
You're a new dad.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's write a show. You and I will write one right after this. It's going
to
be great. We'll take it
to
another network.
Say, kind of the same deal or not really? Or is it different?
No. Well, it's a lot of people I've worked with before because it's a lot of – it's Tina's production company. Tina Fey, you know, makes a show. It's a lot of SNL people. A lot of the directors that I worked with, I'd worked with before. So it was pretty much – and I've known Ellie, you know, for 20 years. You know what I mean? Like, so it was like – it's that's an easy, fun job. That's like, oh, yay, of course.
Cool.
Yes, I would love to do that. Thank you for paying me to come have fun.
I'm still blown away that you're learning that your show is canceled.
Oh,
reading
yeah.
it. That is the brutality. Matt, you want to know what television entertainment is like?
But that's what SNL does to you. That's the reason why SNL is good, because you go through that every single day at SNL.
What do you mean?
So then when you
why?
See your show gets canceled, you're like, oh, great.
What do you mean you go through every day?
Well,
you
in
see
the beginning,
you see
SNL,
sketches, right?
you're auditioning for a show you're already on every single week.
Oh,
and I did
right.
it for, I did it for 9 years. And,
right.
And by the end of it, you're dead inside as far as that goes. Like, it's like in the beginning, like, you know, it's like your sketch is cut and you're like, thank you.
Right.
And then you
right.
run upstairs and you cry in your dressing room and
yep.
you don't want anyone to see because
yep.
you don't want to that to be seen. You don't want to be known as that. And it sucks. And every week, or this line is cut, or made it in. Thank God it made it in. This is the best week of my life. I'm with this cool celebrity, and it's going to be on
mm-hmm.
television everywhere. It's cut. We lost time. What? Someone's joke went 10 seconds too long, so mine's gone.
Yep.
And you just learn to – it's not as precious. So, like –
I went through that. I went through that.
Yeah, it was that. That happened when that got canceled. I went like, oh, okay, like real jobs, not SNL.
So
now,
I'm not on
Dream Job anymore. Like, right, now I'm working it. Again. So now,
I used to make extra money doing under fives and being in Wayne's Worlds and things on the show.
Even when
I
went to Wayne's World?
Yeah, yeah.
I've
been in a bunch of sketches.
Just like only one of them like is
I did.
Like...
I did a sketch with David Spade, but for some reason they're not in the app. Only one or two of them are in the app, but. In the beginning,
music rights,
you know, in the beginning, okay, rights. Here's Massachusetts Wally Ferriston's brother, Spike, right? And I've never been on TV before. So what do? I call everybody. I call the whole world. Hey, I'm going to be on this
and
show.
And then it gets cut.
And then it gets cut.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I never cried. But dealing with the after effects of my stupidity calling everybody really
depressing. I feel like every actor has that.
Right.
I was on
but I did not have a contract riding on being on the air. So I got over it after a couple beers.
One of my first jobs, I was on a show called 100 Center Street. It was the first the first scripted show on the Court TV. It was like Court TV decided to do a scripted show.
Right,
like essentially like Law and Order Junior. It was called 100 Center Street. It was like the address of the courthouse.
Yeah, the courthouse.
I was in one scene I shot all day. I was with Alan Arkin. And I was – Alan Arkin's like an
old – cool.
He started like Second City, like improviser. Like he's got – I love him. He's hilarious. And they put me next to Alan Arkin in a bar scene. I'm just an extra. I have no lines with him, but I'm just standing there, and he just goes, hey, when the scene starts, I'm just going to like pretend I'm talking to you, and then I'll start talking to the other person. And I was just like, oh, my God. I tell every human being I know. I had a party at my house.
Right.
The show starts. You see one sweater elbow. I'm cut off at my elbow completely. Like all my elbow is
so
like, but everyone has that.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, everyone's done that. But I learned very early on, like telling friends, like in my first year at SNL, going like, hey, I think my thing's getting on. Like,
yeah,
don't, like,
yeah,
not
yeah.
to do that because
well, now
it'll get on and then 5 seconds before
don't
it's
you find
to
be
now you can share the YouTube clip later.
The worst thing in the world is bowing at the good nights in a costume of a sketch that didn't air.
Oh, shit.
that's always a fun
thing.
Yeah, why is he dressed as a diaper?
Why is he dressed as a cowboy?
I get the opposite now. My mom scolds me. She calls. She goes, why did you tell me you were going to be on CNN? Because I never know. And why do you care at this point? Why do you care? Mm-hmm. Anyway, we got to take a break. We're having a lot of fun here with Bobby Moynihan and Matt Farrell. We'll be right back. Think of all the weird things found in cars. I'm not talking about your garden variety petrified French fries or melted crayons. I'm talking about live snakes, bizarre trinkets, the kind of stuff that just makes you wonder about folks. Another thing that will make you wonder, but in a good way, are Continental belts. Bet you didn't know they're OE in tens of millions of Chrysler, Dodge, Ford, and GM vehicles that roll off the assembly line. They're also OE on the majority of BMWs and VWs. Now Continental is launching the aftermarket multi-V belt with the OE pedigree. It's their OE technology series, belts that are fanatically engineered for a perfect fit, form, and function. And Continental has an OE technology series multi-V belt for 98% of the vehicles on the road in the US and in Canada. Hey, you get enough surprises on work? You get enough surprises working on your cars and trucks. A belt should not be one of them. Go with Continental OE Technology Series Multi-V Belts, the belt with the OE pedigree. To get the full story, visit OETechnologyseries.com. OETechnologyseries.com. All right, I just want to take a moment to tell you about a new show we have here on Podcast One, No Excuse with John Tapper. Shut it down and listen to John, the award-winning hospitality legend, as he brings his straight talk and unapologetic approach to daily topics and current events. You don't want to miss his latest interview with Adam Carolla, so download No Excuses every Tuesday on Podcast One, podcastone.com, and Apple Podcasts. Also remember to rate and review.
You're listening to Spike's Car Radio.
I feel like we just got started. Welcome back to Spike's Car Radio here with Bobby Moynihan and Matt Farrah, the smoking tire, not sitting in, doing whatever he's
not
he does.
Sitting in. I got offended by the term sitting
we
in.
We don't have that much time left here. You know,
that's stupid.
We've got to keep moving on here. But I got to talk about David S. Pumpkins, the sketch that changed my life for the better. It's one of those and you co-wrote this?
Yeah, yeah. Mikey Day and Streeter Seidel and I sitting in a room at 5 o'clock in the morning.
Let me tell you, I know much has been said about this, but let me tell you what I'm doing. I'm sitting on the couch watching the show on the East Coast feed. I still am grandfathered in on DirecTV. It's awesome. So 9 o'clock with my wife. The sketch comes on. I am on the floor laughing and mostly enjoying that my wife is looking, going, I don't understand this. I don't get it.
And that's the whole point.
And that's the whole – and that – and so I realized happy. And I remembered, you know, that's where I started as a comedy writer. I loved that stuff. And, you know, when I saw it too, I went, oh, I wish – I had written that, you know,
that
the highest compliment
happy.
To another writer.
Wow, wow,
so,
thank you.
So just give us – where does it come from? Where did it start?
Mikey,
how did this happen?
Mikey
this-
Day – I think me and Mikey Day started talking about just like – it was Halloween. We had Tom Hanks. We were just talking about like if we get a Halloween sketch on, it'll be on every year in those Halloween specials. Like, you know, you want to –
that's
you
really
just,
good
you just
strategy.
Wanna, you
yeah,
want to
yeah.
you wanna last on SNL, so you uh-huh. look for ways to try mm-hmm. and do that.
And a Flag Day sketch.
We had spent,
perfect.
There won't be a Flag Day Arbor Day schedule.
They
there
had
might
a special
if they
for
do
it.
20
we
more
right
years.
We just started talking about Halloween stuff, and we there was that there's that video. God, there's this video. It's this little guy. He's dancing around to some song. A bunch of people sitting on a bed, and they keep pressing the radio, and he keeps dancing. Whenever they press the radio, he stops. And then they play, and when the music starts, we were just watching some weird YouTube
right,
video.
Right.
And we were just laughing at that and kind of doing that for each other. And we're like, what if we just do that? Like, figure out something. And we were like, what if
so
we
it
were
started
like,
with
it was
the
like
dance.
A haunted house. Like, we were like, what if we were just these skeletons, but instead of scaring people, we just popped out and did this weird dance.
So that's it. So it starts with the dancers, not with the character for Hanks.
I don't, it was like, we were talking, well, it was like
because
that.
That's the part I thought you added on.
I've told this story a million times and like, it gets convoluted, but like, somehow we got on the topic
of. It sounds
like
we should do a documentary about
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
It's
all really different deep. Perspectives. Of-
yeah,
it's one of those sketches where you go like, I wish that there was a reason for this, but it was more just the amalgamation of a lot of dumb things, like talking about how there's no Santa Claus for Halloween.
Right.
So what if we made a Santa Claus for Halloween? And Mikey just going, what if his name was just David Pumpkins? And then I was like, what if it was David S. Pumpkins? And just adding nonsense.
Right.
And it was at one point it was a whole haunted house, and we came like there was paintings of these people, and they would move, and we. Mm-hmm. Start dancing, but then we were just like it's too many sets and
right, and it was 100
and
floors
you have Tom
of horror,
Hanks.
Right?
So then we just we were like, what if it was just like in an elevator? We just thought that would be stupid if it was a ride at an amusement park, and the whole joke is like.
It's an elevator.
What's so scary about this guy? But then he actually scares you at the end, and he
right.
is terrifying.
But also the idea that we don't have enough scary things to fill 100 floors.
And so he was,
wait,
he was 173 of them. 73 of the floors.
Oh,
were
there's
just
so many
David
funny
Pumpkins.
Things about
there's
that.
Just so it was pretty much us going, well, this is nonsense. But how do we justify this nonsense and wholeheartedly go like we are. 100% behind David Pumpkin, so you should be too. And that's kind of what happened. Everyone's
really
just like, Tom Hanks hated it.
Level.
He hated it.
He hated it. No, he just didn't get it at first. Like he was very funnily like he's the best, and he's really
yeah.
good at that
mm-hmm.
show. He's done it more than some cast members. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, he's amazing. And
well, it's hard.
He could see. He was like, I think in his mind, he was like, this is either the worst thing in the world, or we accidentally do something great here. And in between Dress and Air, he was still iffy about it.
So that's, by the way, drawing parallel to Little Kicks. That's what we were thinking when we were doing that dance. We
yeah.
were like, this is either going to ruin Julia Louis-Dreyfus' career, or it's going to be great. It's going to be something. What? So the eye poppy. When you're dancing, is that a reference to the video?
No. It was literally a last minute change that we were like, well, we can't. Because in the first one, it was baby sounds. And
right.
we were like, what's just the opposite of baby sounds? And I think we were in my bathroom. Like
Sugar
smoking
Daddy
a cigarette or something. And someone, I think, I don't remember who did it. Someone just went, "Ay, Poppy." And that's all our voices. The whole
just,
song is
and
us.
And you laughed.
Yeah, it's me
right.
and Mikey. It's me going, "Burrow." And
so that's you talking into some sort of.
Yeah, I went up to, God, I'm blanking on his name. So all I could think of is your brother's name, Wally. God. Blanking on his name, the saxophone player from he's been on it for 100 years.
Oh.
Not G.E. Smith. I'm blanking on his name.
He's not there anymore, is he?
God, Lenny Pickett. Jesus
Lenny
Christ.
Pickett. All right.
Lenny Pickett just and Leon
Redbone.
Yeah, Leon Redbone just took all of our weird sounds and made that,
no
that song.
No way.
It's a ringtone on my phone.
Oh, right. Yeah,
it's
no,
ridiculous.
That is the best. Do you
and,
make money off that?
No,
that
I mean, like maybe 6 cents. We did an animated Halloween special that aired.
Yeah. I would like a movie.
Yeah,
I think that would be next.
I think so.
Like a backstory
I think that's the national,
type movie.
The next. I wanted to make a Christmas movie really bad. I really wanted to make
it.
Because it's the whole point is it makes no sense.
Do a Halloween. This is a funny thing that I was trying to tell Eric about. I go, it's not. You know, it, I understand it doesn't make sense to you, but it's making you laugh. And that's what's funny about it. That's all you need to know. And he's describing the writing process
also,
of coming up with this. It made us laugh, so we did it. A lot of people, especially in half-hour comedy, don't know this rule.
Lauren does that every once in a while.
And that's why you have so many shitty sitcoms on the air. Because you go, okay, and I've heard this. I've had executives say to me, that's funny, but I don't understand why you would do that.
And Lauren
does that.
Because
it's funny!
Yeah, he does that every once in a while where – He knows this show so well. He knows it so well, and he knows what's going to hit and what has a chance. And I think on that one, he was like, "They seem so excited about it." Maybe, you know what I mean? Like, I think he just went like, "There's such a weird buzz around this. Let's just try it and see what happens." And
you know, one of the times
nice that it worked.
I went back with Jerry and did write for the show or wrote for Jerry. I was taken by that Lauren notes all the sketches, but not all the writers take those notes.
Yeah.
It's kind of was optional, which I love.
Yeah,
he's like, go ahead and do it.
If you fight your battle or if you go
out,
I've had things where I went up to him.
Right.
And he's just like, this is cut. And I've gone up to him and I'm like, I think I should do that. And he was like, okay.
Right.
Like, he wants you to do that.
Were there sketches that you never get on that you really thought should have got on?
Oh, of course. Yeah, hundreds.
Yeah.
Well, not that I thought should have gotten on, but that I wish I had gotten on.
Like what?
I think it was my last episode. I wrote a RuPaul's Drag Race Junior sketch.
That's funny. I like that.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. Them being really, really the same cattiness and meanness as the judges, but to just little children.
That's very funny.
And who are you going to play in that?
Ross Matthews.
Right.
I wrote a sketch called about a guy named Burl that I tried. I think we did it with Jane Lynch at Dress, but it never made it on and it never got back on. It was a surprise party for this guy named Burl who he had just lost 19 pounds. So he was fine. He finally got to his goal weight of 600 pounds. they built this just mound and it was like a chair. I was a 600 pound man
behind the mound.
The only thing I said in the they would be like, are you so happy, Burl? You did it. And I would go, yeah.
This is great.
It was very weird and depressing, but I loved it.
Eventually, they just bring in a forklift.
All my characters were very odd and bizarre.
I know we're just getting going, listeners, but we have to end the show in a few minutes. I wanted to get to this list because I was given the research on you. It's celebrity impressions. It was a full page.
That's wrong.
I won't make you do any of them, but it was just Bill Belichick, Ken Bone, Susan Boyle, Chris Christie, Mindy Cohn, David Crosby, Ted Cruz, John Daly, Danny DeVito. Do you really do all these guys? Guy Fieri, Jared Fogle, Rob Ford. Those two, great. Barney Frank, James Gandolfini, Jonah Hill, Mike Huckabee. I'm skipping down. George Lucas.
I think I did like 65 impressions or some weird number on SNL. They're all 90% costume.
Then the George Lucas.
George Lucas is my favorite and the only one I thought, like, I go like that one. I thought, like, I did an okay job
and
just because I was that I love.
It was incredible.
Snooki, I just got lucky. I'm loud and Italian.
Snooki,
Guy
right
Fieri, up. Same thing. But, like, any one of those other ones are literally like, hey, Bobby's got to do an impression. And they were like, make him Susan Boyle. That's pretty much
Rosie
what
O'Donnell.
All of it was. Definitely.
Steven Seagal.
I love her. She's the greatest. I'm mad
She's
I did
great.
That one.
Andrea
did
Bocelli.
Did she not find it funny?
No, she was super cool about
it
actually.
Like an
but
easy
I
joke.
But I love her so much that I was sad that I just wanted to get on the show that much that week that I was like, fine. Like, it's
when
more
you have
of
a
my
man,
own.
When you have a man playing a woman, right? That's
not
that's why you feel
sign.
Bad about it. Yeah,
right.
It seems like
yeah.
a little
it felt
too easy,
like
but...
it felt like a.
But
slam
you're a big
like,
Star Wars nerd, aren't you?
Sure.
And,
if you want to call it that.
When we were together, I swear you told me you had seen early cuts of the new J.J. Abrams.
I had. I got super lucky. Not early cut. I got friendly with J.J. through SNL stuff, and
that's amazing.
We were just. I went. I was in Bad Robot for a meeting, a general meeting with another person to talk about some other project, and J.J. just came up behind me. He was like, Moynihan, what are you doing here? And like, we just started talking, and then he was like, you got a minute? And
do you have a minute? I want to show
and he,
you
we
Star
just
Wars.
Started. We just started walking in, and I was just like, "Yeah." He was like, "You got a second? Come on in here." And like, I had an inkling. I was like, "He's not. There's no way this is about to happen. There's no way he's bringing me into an editing room to see a scene from Star Wars." And now I can talk about it because the movie's out. But he brought me in the room and showed me the scene where Han and Chewie come on the Falcon for the first time.
Oh.
And I burst into tears. I mean,
yeah,
like it was
chills,
the cool. I saw
right,
it. Like
chills.
I was like, "What are you? What? What?" Like, and from him, and like he's the coolest. He's so brilliant and so whatever, but there's something in that man's body that goes like, I wonder what is like the coolest thing in the world I could do for this person. And I know like 80 people he's done that for.
Wow.
Like that.
He has yet to do that for me.
Yeah.
Well,
get up, JJ.
I feel like
I used to hang with his dad in the neighborhood. His dad used to live near me, and he's also a writer, and you see where he gets it from. But
just
super cool guy.
Nice dude.
Yeah, super nice dude. Anyway, we're out of time. I want you to come back. I want to talk to you about so much more. So much more. What do you wanted to talk about DuckTales?
All the time.
Hell yeah.
You got a new season of that show going? Kimmy Schmidt?
Yeah, I'm on Kimmy Schmidt, Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt this season. You can watch it. It's on Netflix right now, the first 6 episodes. You can catch me on DuckTales.
Yeah.
On Disney Channel. I'm
Kids
also on
it.
Nature Cat and PBS Kids and...
I haven't seen DuckTales.
Wee
but
Bear
I loved
Bears
it when I was a kid.
On the Cartoon Network.
Is DuckTales still like old DuckTales?
It's a reboot. It's new, brand new DuckTales, but it's dope.
But
it's
traditional animation.
Oh yeah, it's all like the original Carl Barks animation. It looks like the original like comic strip. They did an amazing job.
I gotta
job
check
on
that
it.
Out.
It really
I was a
great.
Huge fan of DuckTales when I was a kid.
And Matty Farah, you're doing all sorts of watch podcasts, car podcasts,
the Smoke and Tire podcast, watch and listen podcast, and if you happen to have a collector car in LA, hit me up at matt@thesmokingtire.com because I'm building a 150 car storage facility by the beach.
There you go. Wow. And don't forget to buy tickets for my shows at the Pebble Beach Concours. I've got Jerry Seinfeld the first day, Friday, 8:24, 8:25. Forgive me, I don't have my dates right. And Michael Strahan the next night. All the proceeds go to charity. That's PebbleBeachConcoursForums.com. Catch up with me on Instagram @SpikeFerris. And we'll see you next week on Spike's Car Radio. Real quick, before you go, here are some useful car tips you might not be aware of. A coffee filter with a little bit of olive oil can clean your interior. Removing excess weight from your car will improve gas mileage. And you can place your key fob to your chin to increase its range. Weird, right? Well, here's another tip you also might not know about. TrueCar also helps people get used cars, not just new. That's right. TrueCar isn't just for buying new cars. With a certified dealer network and nationwide inventory of nearly 1 million used cars, you'll enjoy real pricing on actual inventory and a simpler buying experience whether you buy new or used. And with TrueCar, users can see what others paid, so they know if they're getting a good deal before buying. They're also more likely to enjoy a faster buying experience by connecting with TrueCar certified dealers. When you're ready to buy a new or used car, check out TrueCar and enjoy a more confident car buying experience. And as always, some features not available in all states.
Thanks for listening to Spike's Car Radio. Download new episodes every Wednesday on the Podcast One app or subscribe now at Apple Podcasts or PodcastOne.com.